In a multiverse awash with galactic wonders, the role of the midweek drivettes is simple. As Tessa Snart, Hannah Brown, Katie Dorr, Jessica Ward, Fiona Williams, Eva McDonald, and Emily Jones continue broadcasting across the cosmos on 107.3 Siren FM.
I know some of them we'll never hear from ever again. Never mind, some we will, one of whom hopefully will be with us earlier or later on today. Weather today for Thursday, the 8th of June, highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade. There's going to be light rain predominantly for the day. Good morning, Ben Lewis.
Morning.
Well, what can we say? It's election day. The band called See the Light. Oh, the band called The Elected. It's very confusing. We are transmitting from a programme which has been recorded 24 hours earlier. I had to sort of state that because you may still think it's live. We can actually communicate with you live. It's going to be as live. We're going to have all the usual favourites of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, such as Richard Fitzwilliams, who'll be joining us shortly. He'll be talking about Wonder Woman.
Oh.
Very good movie. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Gave it a 10 out of 10 myself. Thought it was very enjoyable. But whether Richard goes with that, exactly. Yes. We've also got the delights of Ian Lennox, if he can remember. I mean, I think he should be all right. I sent him a reminder. He should be okay for that way. But Eva McDonald will be joining us to talk about a fantastic event she's doing over the weekend. And Gemma Baker will be talking about poets and so on. And William Sitwell's given us a thumbs up as well. So
fabulous.
It's all looking good. We might even feature a little smidgen of Alan Stevens just for you, Ben. Then again,
wow.
Maybe not.
Diana. Fighting does not make you a hero.
What if I promise to be careful? Just a shield, then.
Diana.
No sharp edges.
Be careful of mankind, Diana. They do not deserve you.
You've told me this story.
What is this place? Who are you people?
We are the bridge to a greater understanding.
Right.
What is your mission?
Well, here's the thing. You are in more danger than you think. The boys in the trenches called her Dr. Poison. Millions would die. The war would never end.
I'm going, Mother. If you choose to leave, you may never return. Who will I be if I stay? We'll come. To the war.
Well, technically the war's that way, but we gotta go this way first.
How can a woman fight in this?
Who is this young woman?
She's my,
Diana, Princess of the Mist.
Prince, Diana Prince.
A shimmering blue planet hangs in space. On it lives a true hero of the people. She is a legend, feared by some, beloved by others. It is her sacred duty to defend the world. Or as Thucydides said, between the years 460 BC and 395 BC, the bravest are surely those who have the clearest vision of what is before them. Glory and danger alike, and yet notwithstanding, go out to meet it. They could be describing your good self, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Well, yes, and how appropriate that you quote Thucydides, because one of the reasons Wonder Woman is such a success is that it, firstly, there's this mythological era where we actually hear about what happened, where the gods fought each other, and the link there with the eponymous heroine. And secondly, it is, in a way, an anti-war movie, which there are serious themes which are linked to the action that we actually see, a lot of it taking place in the First World War.
I mean, I knew, Richard, that Ludendorff was a nasty so-and-so, but I didn't realise he was so kind of corrupted by the whole sort of systems. And without any spoilers, who would have thought Ares would have ended up on the British side?
Well, no, I mean, I can't comment on that. As you say, there is always the danger of a spoiler or two. But one of the things with this movie directed by Patty Jenkins, Wonder Woman appeared fleetingly in the disastrous Batman versus.
It's Superman. Not that bad, honestly. You should reappraise it, Richard.
That would mean seeing it again, and I am most emphatically not going to do anything so torturous. But Diana Prince, yes, indeed, we meet her in the Louvre at the beginning of this film, receiving a photographic plate from the First World War sent by Bruce Wayne. And then we go to the island of Themyscira, home to the Amazons, a race of warrior women created by the gods of Mount Olympus to protect mankind against the corruption of Ares, god of war, mortally wounded by Zeus, and to guard against his return. He left behind the god killer, a ceremonial sword. Queen Hippolyta knows Diana's past and forbids her to train for war, but nonetheless she does. And then when a pilot crashes, that's Chris Pine, crashes off the island, then the island is attacked by German soldiers. And when Diana hears of the war, the First World War, well, she wants to stop it, because this is, of course, Ares attempting to destroy the human race. And with reference to Ludendorff, played by a very, very nasty-looking Danny Houston, I have to say, he's attempting to prolong the ghastly conflict with a new weapon. Now, all of this is actually very skillfully and colourfully put together. The movie works, and Gal Gadot is absolutely marvellous as Wonder Woman. I mean, she's really got it. And no question at all, the planning behind the movie, the script, and some of the rather touching relationship she has with Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine, and we have Robin Wright and David Thewlis among the cast. What is indeed not to love? A lot of thought and imagination went into a movie that's raking in the shackles, and of course we've got a female-led comic book hero. I would say that it's going in absolutely the right direction. There will be a sequel, we know that. Will it be set in America? What period? Because part of the fun of this movie is that they have made it a period film. In fact, not only the Amazons who exist in this rather mythological-like state, completely unaware in their magical island that the Amazons know nothing about what's happening elsewhere, but nonetheless...
Why would they, Richard? You know, Zeus had kind of set them to one side. Why should they get upset about the whole sort of sequence? Created, of course, by William Moulton, who also went on to develop the lie detector test, hence the reason you have the lasso of truth, the triumvirate aspect there of Wonder Woman, at least the third part of that Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman trio. And of course,
I would say when it comes to third part, the one thing that I would urge for the sequel, do not go to 2 hours 20 minutes. It isn't necessary. 1 hour 50, say, would have been fictional. 2 hours.
And let's face it, you know, Captain America was a period piece, but that was World War II, which curiously was where Wonder Woman originally launched as a kind of World War II heroine. But, of course, this is the First World War, the Great War, the war to end all wars.
You see some of the horror of it. Indeed, there are some touching scenes in this movie, and that's why I'm particularly keen to recommend it.
Ben Lewis, not a superhero fan or superheroine fan necessarily, but you've just visited the James Bond Museum in London.
Yes. Morning, Richard. I was just going to comment quickly. On this film, Wonder Woman, anyway, would you recommend seeing all the other segments and other films featuring Wonder Woman to help?
Well, I mean, it depends what floats your boat. If you like this type of movie, you would enjoy them and probably have seen them. I don't, unless you're studying the genre for some reason, there would be no reason to do so. By itself, it's extremely successful. Entirely depends, you know, I mean, on what aspect of it appeals.
And isn't it nice that the actress who plays Etta Candy learnt all her routine as being the Lucy from The Office with Ricky Gervais? Smart.
Where things lead you.
Exactly. Who would have thought it, eh? But I think thumbs up. And actually, Ben, no, it works as a standalone system. Obviously, co-written by Zack Snyder, amongst other things, who's got the next one, of course, Justice League, which launches in November.
Of course, Zack Snyder, who had that extraordinary hit 300 some years ago.
And people say, whatever happened after that? But still, never mind.
Yes, there is that.
Superman Dawn of Justice, that's where it all started to go wrong. And then, of course, we had Suicide Squad. And in addition to that, of course, the aforementioned Batman versus Superman.
There are so many of these sort of movies, but that's what makes the money, and that's what with all its sequels and prequels.
One final point, Richard, whilst we're talking about the whole thing, I think Wonder Woman's difference in terms of being a superheroine, unlike Black Widow, unlike Black Canary, unlike indeed the Catwoman, she's somebody who effectively has always been pure of heart, in essence, whereas the others have kind of had a bit of a shady past. And certainly Harley Quinn is somebody who's also gone down a line of being slightly shady, but we're not here to discuss.
No, it's an interesting point, because I do think that shades in the future may well appear in the character because it makes it more interesting.
So let's move on to My Cousin Rachel.
Yes, indeed. And moving on to Daphne du Maurier, I mean, her novels have included, of course, the gothic melodrama Rebecca and one of the most famous horror films, The Birds, both, of course, directed by Hitchcock and regarded as classics. Here we have a director, Roger Michell, and it's keeping up the suspense in a movie, and the whole point of this movie is that it's a mysterious eponymous heroine. The story is so rich in ambiguity. Philip, played by Sam Claflin, is an orphan. He's young, impetuous, he's ignorant of women, and he receives a letter from his cousin Ambrose, who complains about how badly he is treated by his wife Rachel. Philip goes to Italy to visit him, but learns Ambrose has died, and he inherits Ambrose's property, a large country estate in Cornwall. Rachel comes to visit him, and of course he intends to question her about his cousin's death, but in fact what he actually does is falls head over heels in love with her and becomes obsessed by her, and he behaves as though he were bewitched, ignoring any warning. So as he approaches his 25th birthday, here's the rashest thing he could do: give up his inheritance to her in the hope that she'll marry him. But could she be responsible for his cousin's death? When he falls ill, is she trying to poison him? There's a mysterious Italian called Rinaldi who appears. What exactly is he doing in Cornwall, and what does she think of Philip? And the the test of this movie is whether you're gripped and whether you're drawn into its web. And Rachel Weisz plays Rachel, and she's perfectly cast, I think, because she is a woman of fascination. She's beautiful, she's independent, and she has a spell, and I think she extends it to the viewer. So, I mean, despite the fact she's clad in mourning, of course, after her husband's death, the movie is actually a rather fascinating study of parts of the human condition, falling in love, how almost deranged you can become. And very fine performance by Holiday Grainger as Philip's childhood friend Louise, who resents Rachel. Ian Glenn, a good cameo as Philip's guardian, who's trying to caution him about what he's doing. Visually, there's stunning beauty of the rural settings in Cornwall, as you probably expect, but it challenges you, how do you respond to Rachel and to the events that unfold? So, not a classic, because that would have to have a very special sort of impact, but well-scripted, insightful, and I'd say thought-provoking.
And not to be confused with the 1952 version of the same My Cousin Rachel.
I have not seen that, but it had Richard Burton and Olivia de Havilland. Oh. And it's one of those, it is a very, very intriguing story, and I was happily ensnared in the web that it entraps you in.
Now, when you said not a classic, clearly everything is relative. Last week, Ben, while you were enjoying the delights of your parents and the James Bond Museum and other such London scenarios, Richard was going apoplectic. I say again, apoplectic, with anger and concern and annoyance over the not-so-classic incarnation that he entitled Arthur. With David Beckham.
Yeah, right.
I have never in the entire... I mean, it's very rare. I mean,
ranting?
It was, you listen to the podcast. It's phenomenal. So, bottom line is, My Cousin Rachel contrasted with Arthur. Would you say it would be a classic then? Or would you say... did you think I made the right decision actually deciding to go and see Wonder Woman as opposed to Arthur, which I was so tempted to go and see?
Think you're just trying to tempt me. Successfully do, and I mean, occasionally when you see something that's really awful, you do want to try and convey how ghastly it is and warm, because, you know, that is 2.5 hours of someone's life totally thrown away. Well, the Wonder Woman is enormous fun, or most of it is, and a movie like My Cousin Rachel, well, I mean, a classic is one of those terms that it's rather like icon. It's probably overused, but I did feel that with Rebecca and the Birds, it's fair now to call them a classic. You should probably wait some decades to see whether the film has staying power of a sort before you actually use a sobriquet that should be pretty precious. But I do sometimes feel people use the word classic to describe a film simply because it was made 50, 60, 70 years ago, and then it's got time on its side, and people wouldn't necessarily want to rewatch it. But they are both excellent. So is My Cousin Rachel. It's just that there's something that I did feel there's a certain impact that a movie has where you do feel possibly it might be regarded as such in the future. And I didn't feel this had that, but I felt it had a lot.
It can be reappraised. Ben, My Cousin Rachel, would it be floating your boat?
I think, to be honest, I think I'd actually give the Wonder Woman one a bit more of a go than My Cousin Rachel. Mm. I mean, it looks okay. It looks watchable. But out of the two, I'd probably want to watch Wonder Woman more than...
Patty Jenkins back in the directorial seat and chair. You've got, obviously, the joys and the excitement of Gal Gadot. Don't go to Lebanon, because if you go to Lebanon, they've banned Wonder Woman because Gal Gadot is an Israeli actress, so no chance of actually seeing it in Lebanon.
Not political whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that is how a country becomes a laughing stock, behaving like that.
Curiously, they didn't ban Dawn of Justice, in which she made her appearance, but there we are. That's obviously they hadn't sussed that one out. There.
Still, they probably fell asleep before its end. So
Richard, please.
I'm sure the Lebanese have heard of torrenting and piracy.
On this as well, where people are actually casting their vote in the British... I mean, please, just step aside. We have to let it go. Ben, last two questions for Richard, please.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic lip with us on the show this morning?
Oh, yes, I have. Alex has been so wonderfully provocative.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I look forward to it.
Curious enough, if you are expecting an end caveat trailer on the very end of Wonder Woman, there isn't one, okay? As I thought there might have been, obviously looking ahead to Justice League, but if you are waiting for that, you might delight in Sia featuring Labyrinth and To Be Human, but you won't get any other smidgen at the end of the actual thing. That's a bit of a public service broadcasting. Not a spoiler, but it is very good. And wasn't the Trafalgar Square scene quite heart-moving, Richard?
Yeah, that was... no, that was extremely good.
Under skies that big city heights, I felt you walk right through me. You're the thing that I invoke. My old persistent ghost sent to make me crazy.
And oh, it's hard now. The time
John Wenham's delightful events diary. Good morning, John. I know he might be sort of thinking, oh, this is very strange. I can hear him, but I haven't seen him. That's because I'm actually around Bramham at present. It's getting wet at this particular moment in time. Because, I mean, Ben would have been with us, but at the end of the day decided, no, you didn't want to stand in a field getting wet, so you thought, fair enough.
That's okay. Sit there, roll around in the mud.
In the mud, yeah, perhaps not. Newark Air Museum this Saturday, the 17th of June, and Sunday, the 18th of June, from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. It's the 2017 Cockpit Fest. I'll say that again. The 2017 Cockpit Fest. A 2-day charitable event. provides a focal point for cockpit owners from across the United Kingdom and takes place on Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th of June, as we've mentioned, at the site in Eastern Nottinghamshire. That's the Newark Museum. Museum volunteers will endeavour to open many of the aircraft for public visiting and viewing throughout the weekend. There'll be a small additional charge to access museum aircraft, which will include the Phantom FGR2 XV490. Sure, that's very important.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's on loan to the museum, and it'll all be opened by its owner as well. Visitors should also note that some of these exhibits travel many miles to be at the museum for the weekend. Many will start to leave the site from 2 p.m. on the Sunday. Therefore, early viewing is recommended to avoid disappointment. Tickets for adults £9, concessions £8, children £4.50, and a family of two adults and three children £24. Inquiries 01636 707170. That's 01636 707170. At the New Lincoln Theatre Royal, the Word Theatre. That's the Word Theatre, which we'll be speaking about with Gemma Baker. The next part of the production. Not necessarily immediately afterwards. Hopefully we'll go to Ian Lennox.
In due course.
Exactly. The Word Theatre brings the biggest, most exciting and relevant spoken word artists in the UK to the stunning theatre stage of the New Theatre Royal every month. Set to be one of the UK's biggest spoken word nights, featuring award-winning performers from around the county and open mic and live music. The first event will bring the Saboteur award-winning Fat Girls Don't Dance spoken word show by Maria Ferguson, supported by Peterborough Poet Laureate Charlie Jenever. The Word Theatre, partially funded by Arts Council England and the National Lottery, and is performing at the New Lincoln Theatre Royal on Thursday the 15th of June at 7:30 p.m. And a little sneak preview once again, in addition to speaking to Gemma Baker on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition shortly, Gemma will also be attending an Inspired On Air piece the day beforehand.
Very busy.
Exactly. Up next, hopefully, Ollie, Oboe, and maybe, just maybe, Ian Lennox.
Let's work it out.
Texas, and let's work it out. Perfect. Perfect. Well, he's back with us again for his usual Thursday morning slot, although, as we've said, this is a pre-record 24 hours earlier. It's Ian Lennox. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Well, we're okay, actually. I think, all things considered, we're still alive, thriving, and generally enjoying the wet, damp conditions.
Yes. We've had a worse up here, I think.
Well, you always do in the north.
I've had a leak in the roof for 2 days. No one can get it mended because it's so dangerous.
Well, exactly. You know, it's just one of those challenging things that we have to cope with. How are the cats?
Oh, very well, thank you. In rude health. They've just had their breakfast, and I think they've gone after sleep on a full stomach.
Right. Oh, well, that's okay then. All's well with the world as long as the cats are sort of doing it. I was going to actually refer to your Facebook package, but for some reason our computer-based systems have decided to say, no, we can't find Ian Lennox on Facebook whatsoever. They've actually sort of found you, but there's just nothing coming through from that perspective.
Oh, well.
It'll happen. Never mind. The good news is we can at least say...
Journalist, TV producer, novelist, and 21st century Newcastle man. It's Ian Lennox.
So what have you been doing this week then, Ian? Since we last spoke, when you were in the hammock and we were talking about hammock scenarios,
yeah,
and the hammock weather was there, presumably if the inclement conditions, you haven't been hammockising.
Indeed not. I've been testing out my new umbrella. But I've been kind of writing. I've started, as you know, I'm on the second draft of another book. And I have kept up my rule of writing at least 500 words a day. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that quite a bit. The hole in my roof has preoccupied me somewhat.
I can see that. Yeah, just sometimes these things are sent to challenge us, and we just have to sort of cope without them, really.
And I don't know, really, writing things on Facebook far too many, I think. And I'm meeting some friends and doing a bit of shopping and stuff. Sort of thing old men do, you know.
Well, I mean,
reading about Newcastle United. But they've now been linked with over 100 people, I think, and not signed one.
I mean, obviously, Geoff Thompson did a little memoriam yesterday it was Tuesday, effectively, to Cheick Tiote.
He
passed away after scoring some fine goals for Newcastle United.
He scored one.
Well, one fine goal.
Actually, Alice, he did, in fact, score two. One was disallowed, and it was against Manchester City.
Well, that's understandable.
Well, no, there was absolutely no doubt about it at all. It was on television, and the replays quite clearly show the referee.
Oh, Ian, you're not allowed to score against Manchester City. It's not.
Well, obviously not, because the goal was disallowed. But anyway, the goal he did score was, of course, the monumental game against Arsenal, where they were 4-0 down at half time. Mm-hmm. Arsenal had a player sent off about 10 minutes in the second half, I think. Newcastle then hit three goals past them, and with not long to go, Tiote was a corner kick on the right wing, came across, it was cleared, and Tiote was about 25 yards out, and he hit it with his left foot, which is his wrong foot, on the volley, and it sort of zipped inside the near post, and he scored the equalising goal. And the thing I always remember about it is his run back to the halfway line, because it was outside the penalty area, the crowded penalty area. He was on his own, basically. I ran. I've never seen him run so fast. It was just like, I don't know, the adrenaline, I suppose, just took him off. I've never seen people, I mean, there was no one to catch him. And anyway, it so happened that we had another chance, I think, with Barton, about 2 minutes later, and the ball just went wide. But I've never seen a game like it, never.
Well,
and he was the star of it, of course.
Do you remember
and apparently, I never met him, but some people who do know, obviously knew him. He's a very quiet, modest man, but no one said, he was very well liked, not least because he was a lion on the pitch, of course. He was, I know one of your players, Vincent Kompany, was up with him at Anderlecht, and he said he saw him when he was 18, he played with him when he was 18, they're both very young. And he says he was the same then, he was as tough as anything. And he just, I don't know.
Well, it just goes to
it's
show
to
when your number's up, that's the bottom line, really.
But, yeah, but when you think about it, you know, there's, I think there's two other African players died in training recently. And then there's David Ginola. He had a heart attack, but fortunately, people got to him in time. There's Pavel Sunichak, my the old goalkeeper for Newcastle United.
And they all have
Fabrice Muamba as well.
Yes, exactly. Yes, Fabrice Muamba, who managed to survive.
Well, these people are, you know, super fit, you know. So I just don't know.
Well,
I don't
supposedly. Know. Anyway, Ben, yes, moving on from that perspective, you said you remember the thing. Any questions you want to put to Ian?
Oh, well, I was going to put the Czech Tiote the question to you, Ian. But have you been catching up with the Champions League just recently? Did you watch the game yourself?
Yes, I did. It was quite a good game, I thought. And Real Madrid looked to be probably the best team in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, they looked like the stronger side at the game myself, I thought. But
and it's strange. I mean, Ronaldo is 30, 31 now. 31. And he has slowed down a little bit, but he's much cleverer than he was. His runs at the box are really clever.
Compare Ronaldo with Wayne Rooney. You know, one still actually thriving and winning Champions Leagues. The other one perhaps playing his last game for Manchester United in a testimonial for Michael Carrick. Never mind.
Yeah, well, he's had a great career, hasn't he, people?
Oh, yeah, he's England's highest scorer, isn't he? So.
Part of the time, he wasn't playing as a striker either. He was playing in some midfield link, isn't he?
Oh, however, as we sort of continue with a whole variety of other sort of elements, etc., I believe that it's not a genuine. I think it's a test that we've actually been hearing in the background. It's the alert. It's all very exciting.
Oh, we're all good.
Have you been smoking again, Alex?
Now, I never have, never intend to. So, yeah, apart from the sizzling hot shows that we provide on a weekly basis for the Midweek Drive. Last night, Midweek Drive launched another excerpt from the band Lover, who I think Ben actually called as being a sort of Wendy James-esque sort of soul, who was actually within that, with Sarah Bradbury being the lead singer of Lover. They've got another single out. And now that Camo has actually ridden off into the sunset, he's taken his milk and his horse and he's headed off into Nashville heaven. He hasn't died. It's just he's never gone the sort of production on a semi-regular basis. We've got a piece of music which is certainly not country music, but still requires Ian Lennox's critical ear to say, is that great or is that not so great? Are you ready for Fallen Famous? It could also be about Newcastle United, really. Fallen Famous. And Lover.
Is this probably the bad mood here?
Yes, the cats are ready, everything's sorted, here it comes. Okay.
We're standing on the bodies of the fallen famous. Standing tall in the shadows of the misbegotten. Our costumes are fancy but our motives rotten. One leg of oblivion and the pact's forgotten. We're standing in the shadows of the misbegotten. Bravery, slavery, which would you choose? You're standing here telling me there's nothing to lose. I'm sitting here telling you I'm lost and undone. There's so much to run from but nowhere to run. Stepping over the bodies of the fallen famous. Carousing in the back room, aloof and aimless. Sociologically, can any rule explain us? Our appetite to walk over the fallen famous. Our costumes are fancy, but our motives rotten. One lick of oblivion and the pact forgotten. We're standing in the shadows of the misbegotten. standing here telling me I'm back in the game. I'm sitting here telling you I'm lost and undone. There's so much to run from, but nowhere to run. Stepping over the bodies of the fallen famous. Decadence alone wasn't enough to tame us. In a world with no consequences to contain us, we're standing on the bodies of the fallen famous.
Standing on the bodies of the fallen famous. Could almost be the interviewees that Ian's worked his way through over the years for Tyne Tees Television. Maybe not. What did you make of Lover and Fallen Famous, Ian Lennox?
Well, after about 10 seconds in, mm-hmm. Ollie went through the cat flap. And I think it shows good judgment. Okay. I put it on speaker,
yes.
and as you know, the if you start listening to records and music over the phone, it's
not great.
Debilitating experience.
It is.
And the background, the music, the arrangement didn't lend itself to that at all. It just sounded sounded like someone sounding the horn all the time.
Somebody
said. I mean, I couldn't follow it. It's partly because of the, as I say, listening to it over the phone, it just didn't lend itself to that at all. So I'd rather not pass too stringent a comment on it.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, that's. I can't even reveal what the midweek drivets made of it last night because we haven't done that as yet. So.
Oh right.
So timey wimey.
Well, I'm sure it'll sound better in the studio than it does on the phone over the phone. But most music does. But the type of background music that they had there, the backing, it was just like somebody tearing a bit of paper up.
Well, you know, that's just all part of the rich tapestry.
So, anyway.
And whether Professor Jason Whittaker or indeed Shaylee McKenzie actually sort of gave it a thumbs up, we'll, who knows? You know, check out the podcast.
Yes. Well, I shall accede to their opinion because they have a much better environment which to listen to the record. I thought it was going to be a bit like Pink Floyd at first. It seemed one of those internal intros. But then it.
Do you sew, Ian? Yes.
Good Lord, no, I can't sew a button. No.
Well, next Tuesday, that would be the 13th of June, is National Sewing Day. Do you sew,
really?
Ben?
Yeah, I can sew.
You see, Ben...
learned at school, weirdly.
Ben learned how to sew at school. This is as the election finally draws to a close, well, it's over, etc. It's time to lighten the mood. What better way than with a touch of crochet? National Sewing Day with the British Heart Foundation is shining a light on a national travesty, according to Donna McGinnigal, a retail project manager for the British Heart Foundation. The fact of the matter is that we are not making sure that we can sew. More than half of us can't actually sew, and we're throwing stuff away and spending as a way to actually deal with savable closet favourites.
Right.
I thought, Ian, you'd be a certain person who'd be regularly darning your socks by the dim light of the candle somewhere.
No, I'm in the throwaway society as far as socks are concerned.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, well. I don't know if you noticed, there's some weird thing happens at like black magic and washing machines because when you put socks in, there's a certain number go in, but a certain number come out, and they're not exactly the same.
Exactly. I gave up with that years ago. I mean, Ben, did you notice the missing sock syndrome that occurs when, you know, you put socks in the laundry and you find one comes out but not both?
Yeah, either that or if you've got something like a hoodie or something else in there, it gets lost up there and you don't realise until you put the hoodie on that there was a sock up there.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing worse than finding a hoodie in your sock. Or vice versa, or a sock in your hoodie.
Anyway, can I get back to National Sewing Day? Because I would like to, if I was a journalist still, what I would like to do would be an article on how these things come into being.
Yes. Well, you still are a journalist, Ian. I mean, you say...
retired. I'm the hammock correspondent of the Gosforth now.
you could put that up. By the way, how is Arthur McKenzie coping with the Lions tour? Does he not care, really?
Oh, my goodness. He came out of my house to fix something for me a couple of days ago.
Possibly the
roof. I told him that Auckland are playing today. I think it's Auckland. Anyway, one of the top teams.
Yes.
And I forgot to ring him to tell him.
Well, hopefully we've reminded you. You know, that's the key thing. In a time-travelling way that's basically at the heart of the Midweek Drive morning edition, whilst one of us is getting wet in a field in North Yorkshire.
Are you in a field? Oh, you
At the time this is actually going out, yes, the likelihood is I will actually be in a film.
Oh, I'll be thinking of you then.
I hope so. Yeah. Last two questions for Ian Lennox, please. Ben Lewis.
Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us on the show this morning?
Yes, I have.
Brilliant. And will you join us again next week?
I do hope so. I mean, continue the further controversy of Newcastle v Brighton. I hope.
Oh, indeed. I'll be under a new government as well.
Oh.
Or the same government. Who knows?
Yes, exactly.
Just too much for me to face. I climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space. On the roof is peaceful as can be, and there the world below can bother me. Let me tell you now, when I come home feeling tired and weak, I go up where the air is fresh and sweet.
On the roof,
I get away from the hustling crowd and all that rat race noise down in the street.
On the roof,
the only place I know, where you just have to wish to make it so. Let's go up on the roof.
Up on the roof.
Telling you right smack dab in the middle of town, I found a paradise that's trouble-free. And if this world starts getting you down, there's room enough for two up on the roof.